VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The future of Brexit is more uncertain now than ever after the British Parliament Wednesday turned down 16 different options to the government's twice-rejected deal for leaving the European Union. The House of Commons took over Brexit from Prime Minister Theresa May, who has so far failed to get a deal through. Lawmakers began debate Wednesday with 16 separate plans. Negotiators reduced that number down to 8, which were brought to vote, all rejected. Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May says that she'll quit if that helps produce a Brexit deal. AP correspondent Warren Levinson.
Prime Minister Theresa May has told a party gathering she would step down once the Parliament votes to deliver an exit from the European Union. The sudden concession was intended to bring enough members of May's Conservative Party on board to make a Brexit deal. She told a meeting of Conservative backbenchers she's aware of a desire for new leadership for the second phase of negotiations. According to a transcript of the meeting, she says she's willing to quit earlier than she had planned to do what's right for the country and for the party. May did not set a specific date for her departure. I'm Warren Levinson.
President Trump says that Russia has to get out of Venezuela. Russian military personnel recently arrived in the country. Mr. Trump spoke to reporters at the White House Wednesday, standing next to Fabiana Rosales, the wife of Venezuelan opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido. Officials in Portugal have placed the country on high alert for wildfires amid the prolonged dry spell and unseasonably high temperatures. The government denounced a civil protection alert from Wednesday through Sunday because of what it called a significant worsening of the wildfire risk. The alert means exceptional measures are being enacted, including more firefighters on standby and a ban on burning cut vegetation. This is VOA News. The cyclone that has killed at least 460 people in Mozambique alone and left 1.8 million people in need of urgent help continues to plague folks. AP correspondent Charles A. Ledesma.
The president was asked by a reporter if he's willing to back up his demand to Moscow.
Mozambique's president has estimated that around 1,000 people may have died in the flood-hit nation. However, emergency responders say the toll could be higher as floodwaters drain away and reveal more bodies. Others fear the actual number of dead may never be known. Meanwhile, medical charity Doctors Without Borders on the ground in the stricken city of Beira report that people are drinking from contaminated wells. The group says it's seen hundreds of cases of acute watery diarrhea in the past few days. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
That's AP's Charles de Ledesma reporting. And North Korea continues to pose a nuclear threat to the United States and its allies. The commander of U.S. forces in South Korea told a congressional panel on Wednesday. General Robert Abrams said that Pyongyang's production of nuclear weapons materials and missiles are inconsistent with the pledge of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to denuclearize. He said despite a reduction in tensions along the demilitarized zone and a cessation of strategic provocations coupled with public statements of intent to denuclearize, little to no verifiable change has occurred to North Korea's military capabilities. A top lawmaker says that Attorney General William Barr is combing the special counsel Russia probe report to see what it can make public.
Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham had dinner last night with Barr.
The Attorney General is going through the report now to take out grand jury information that can't be disclosed by law. He wants to make sure that there's nothing going to be released to the public or the Congress that would hurt classified information that hurt sources and methods.
Graham tells the AP Barr will also check with prosecutors who have cases stemming from the probe to make sure any release won't hurt their investigations.
Once that's done, he'll release the report to Congress and come and testify.
He's hoping that all happens next month. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
A self-professed neo-Nazi pleaded guilty Wednesday to federal hate crimes in the death of a protester in the 2017 Charlottesville white supremacist rally. James Fields has already been convicted on state charges of plowing his car into a group of counter-protesters, killing Heather Heyer and injuring 19 others. Fields did not speak in court except to respond, "Yes, sir," when the judge asked if he understood the charges to which he was pleading guilty. More at VOANews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, March the 28th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. The government of Burundi has released the three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of their country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza.
From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, Free Our Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime.
Katie Nivyabandi is a Burundian human rights activist currently living in exile in Canada. In the Second World Health Organization's Africa Health Forum kicked off this week in Cape Verde with a focus on how to provide universal health care to the people on the continent. And members of the opposition in Tanzania are accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling CCM party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, for using underhanded methods of repression against other opposition parties.
Just today, we were supposed to have an internal party meeting in one of the suburbs of Dar es Salaam, and the police invaded our meeting and disrupted it. And later, we went to the party headquarters, and police invaded the party headquarters and asked us to stop doing a constitutional meeting of the party.
That is Mr. Zito Kabwe, head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. We'll speak to him later on in the show. We are covering those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Burundi, where the government has released three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of the country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza. The girls were arrested last week and transferred to a jail in Ngozi, about 50 kilometers from their school district. The news of their arrest caught the attention of the international community, many denouncing the rationale behind their arrest. A social media campaign, hashtagged Free Our Girls, trended on Twitter and other social media platforms, with thousands of people around the world calling for their release. And now that the girls have been released, many are now questioning whether the government of Burundi bowed to social media pressure or that they realized the absurdity of this whole situation. And one of the activists responsible for bringing this issue to the attention of the global social media community is Katie Nivyabandi. She's a human rights activist from Burundi, currently living in exile in Canada. Katie joins me on the line to talk about the human rights situation in her country. All right, so Katie, thank you very much for joining us. Can you give us a little context of why these girls were arrested in the first place? And is there a specific law that they broke or that prevents them from drawing in their textbooks?
Well, what we know is that the girls, so initially it was a group of seven school children, one boy and six girls, and they were arrested for doodling in their textbooks over the photographs of President Nkurunziza. So the seven children were arrested, and the four were released because they were under the age of incarceration, and they were under 15. And the three other remaining girls, 15, 16, and 17, were then charged with offense to the head of state. The full charge is a lengthy one, but it includes the fact that they are a threat to national security. And so they were then moved to a different jail, a different detention center, this time to a jail in Ngozi, which is at least 50 kilometers away from their hometown and their families, and that's the president's hometown.
So some people find it peculiar or strange that these kids were arrested for doodling in their textbooks. But like you said, I guess the question really is, why do academic textbooks in Burundi contain photos of the president? That sounds like some communist-era type of education system. Can you tell us what's going on here?
So I have not seen the textbook myself, but indeed there are several questions that need to be asked about around this matter. Number one, indeed, why do we have textbooks which feature the president in it, and what kind of texts are they, which are accompanying these photos? So this is quite problematic. Mm-hmm. Secondly, for these kids to be arrested, it means that their teachers, the school directors, the headmaster, headmistress, and several other people were involved and reported these kids to the police. Mm-hmm. So this also tells you a lot about the state of the climate that's in the country, and the fact that there's a great climate of fear and of, you know, almost spying and telling on each other to the authorities. And lastly, you have the fact that you have an entire the national police coming into a school to arrest school children for doodles. I mean, it doesn't get any more absurd than this, but it tells you this is the state of Burundi today, and it reflects the dictatorship that really we are under, and the gravity of the situation, but also how broken our justice system is, mm-hmm. and how human rights abuses are carried out by those who should be upholding the law.
So the girls were released. Do you think that the release, their release, had to do with the government bowing to international pressure, especially the social media campaign, or the government just realized the silliness of this whole situation?
It was absolutely the power of people power, and particularly the power of social media. From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, Free Our Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state, and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime. So you had a global outcry over this, and absolutely, I'm very 100% sure that the government responded to the public oppression, the public humiliation that it was getting. I've just landed from Geneva, where I was at the Geneva Summit for Human Rights and Democracy, and I had asked also people to share the hashtag there, and there was a government representative in the room, and here you had people from all over the world using this and trending. I think it was very embarrassing for the government of Burundi to be seen in such a light, and this is the only reason why they released the girls.
So let me ask you this, aside from the social media campaign, what is, do you think, is the reason why the arrest of these girls captured the attention of the world, given that there are other numerous human rights abuses documented by organizations like Human Rights Watch and other international bodies like the UN, you know, regarding the poor human rights record of the government in Burundi? Why this issue, and what else should the world know about what is taking place in your country?
I think what captured the attention of the world is the absurdity of this act. You know, really, to jail children for doodling in their textbooks, it doesn't get any more absurd, any more ridiculous than this. And it doesn't, it's the best illustration of how low this government has fallen. So I think the world over, just people couldn't conceive. People who live in democracies or semi-democratic states just couldn't conceive that a whole government would be able to put children in jail over this. But what the world needs to understand, and particularly our African brothers and sisters, is that this is just, it is one out of thousands and thousands and thousands of human rights abuses that the Burundians are undergoing today. And yes, there's the doodling, but there are so many people losing their lives.
Keti Nivjabandi is a human rights activist from Burundi. She's currently living in Canada, where she joined me on the phone. This is Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. A leading opposition figure in Tanzania is accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling party, the CCM, or Chama cha Mapinduzi. They're accusing the president and his party for using underhanded methods of repression against opposition parties. Mr. Zito Kabwe is the head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. He says that some of the methods include harassment, arrests, and detention of prominent political figures. Earlier this year, the country's parliament passed a law that gave powers to a government-appointed registrar of political parties. That registrar has powers to deregister parties and to punish people that it finds guilty of engaging in what it calls unauthorized civic education. And such activities include, but are not limited to, holding meetings, voter registration drives, etc. And Mr. Zito's party recently received notice demanding for audited reports, a move that Mr. Zito says is a pretext to go after his political party, especially after a high-level defection of veteran politician Malim Seif Harim Hamad from his former party, the Civic United Front, CUF, to join Mr. Zito's Alliance for Change and Transparency. Mr. Zito joins me on the phone from Dar es Salaam to talk about this situation.
What is happening is that 2 days ago, the government issued a notice on the intention to cancel registration of our party and gave two reasons. One is related to audits, and the other one is related to the actions of the so-called members of the party in various parts of the country who burned the flags of another political party. And both reasons, both grounds, are very, very flimsy. Because, one, the audit issue was settled 3 years ago. And the second one, on the banning of the flags of other parties, first of all, the law is very clear that if there is that banning, it has to be the people, the members who were involved, are supposed to be punished and not the party that is supposed to be punished.
Okay. So given that the issue of audit, which I believe this is probably the bigger issue here, you're saying that it was settled 3 years ago. Why now? What prompted this move by...
That's the most important question. Why now? Why now? It is because a week ago, our party received the biggest boost ever because the leading politicians in the other side of the United Republic of Tanzania, the place called Zanzibar, joined our party en masse. And in a week, the party registered 125,000 members.
Mm.
So the state is worried. The state is shaking, and they are trying to threaten us in order to ensure that we do not build the momentum of the new members that we got from Zanzibar and some other parts of the United Republic of Tanzania.
Okay, so this is the ruling party seeing you gaining a lot of membership, a lot of traction.
Yes.
With this new member. I believe that name is Saif Sharif Ahmad, who just joined.
Sharif Ahmad.
A very influential.
Winning every single election in the Zanzibar archipelago, and every single election has been stolen. And the last election was cancelled.
So you believe that this is what prompted the government of Magufuli, President Magufuli, to come after your party?
I believe so, but also should not be seen in isolation. For the last 3 years, there has been a shrinking civic space and political space in the country. The political parties were banned to conduct their political activities. The leaders of the opposition, members of parliament, have been in jail. Myself, I've been arrested more than four times. And just recently, two members of parliament, one of them the leader of the opposition in parliament, spent more than 100 days in jail. So there has been this kind of suppression and oppression and shrinking political space in the country. So it has to be seen, not in isolation,
right,
but in news.
Right, to see a full picture of what is happening in Tanzania, where
yes,
analysts are saying that there's been a campaign of repression against opposition parties like yours.
Yes.
Do you know of any political parties that are being currently audited by this body?
No, all political parties are audited by the Auditor General every year. And so the issue of audit hasn't been an issue at all. It is not even an issue now.
Mm.
They just decided to use it in order to serve their purpose of threatening us. So all other political parties are being audited, and maybe end of this week, the Auditor General will issue his report on the audit, not only of the political parties, but also of other government agencies.
Okay, so since you're sure that you will pass the audit, then that won't be a problem.
The audit has been done. It was done 3 years ago, and we passed. We received the clean audit report.
And
so
that...
there is no issue at all in the audit,
okay.
Not at all.
And so this has been communicated with the relevant authorities.
And it was because it's the National Audit Office that audits the party.
Now,
and we communicated with the Office of Registrar of Political Parties and sent to him all the auditor reports. So there is no issue, but they are trying to find a way of deregistering the party because of the overwhelming support the party has received in the last few weeks.
Mr. Zitto Kabwe is the head of Tanzania's opposition party, Alliance for Change and Transparency, also known as ACT Wazalendo. Environmental activists say that as the global demand for products like wood, paper and many other goods, as that demand continues to rise, people and companies are encroaching ever deeper into Africa's dwindling forests. From Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji brings us this report about conservationists in the country who say that both animals and forests continue to face human threat.
The sound of birds and chimpanzees welcome you as you enter Chebale Forest National Park of Western Uganda. The rainforest is home to a variety of flora and fauna. Big mammals such as elephants, buffaloes, antelopes, birds and reptiles live here. Godfrey Bariesima, the park's head warden, says the forest has 13 different primate species, some only found in Uganda.
We have black and white colobus. We have the gray-cheeked manga bee, Ugandan manga bee, because they found it very unique. And then we have lowest. A lowest monkey is a terrestrial monkey. It doesn't stay up in the trees, just on the ground. And it is also there, and we have a blue monkey, a velvet monkey, and the olive baboon.
But he says this park is commonly famous for the chimpanzees, which scientists claim have more than 97% of man's DNA. Guide Alex Turiatunga says indeed, chimps behave like humans in a way.
So they can tell each call of their own. So they've had a friend. If it is an enemy group, there is a way they also become nervous. Sometimes they can go to attack or they just retreat.
But these animals face challenges mainly resulting from the human interference, such as poaching, says Lile Ajelova, the head of Ugandan Tourism Board. Besides poaching, many forests, home for the wildlife, have been cut, leaving animals with less space to live in and not enough food to feed on.
In Uganda, but I don't believe it is just in Uganda, but it's all over Africa. It's the biggest problem. Why? Because wildlife has lost a lot of their habitat, and there's a lot of interface between humans and wildlife right now. And I would say it's the biggest challenge for wildlife conservation.
She says animals that face more threats are those outside protected areas like national parks and game reserves, as protection is usually left with local authorities who have less expertise and resources. At Bigodi Village, just about 4 kilometers from Chebale National Park, John Tinker has set a home in which he accommodates tourists, local and foreign.
Without wildlife, I wouldn't have this business here. It's because of wildlife that tourists come in this community, see chimps and the other primates in the forest, and then they need a place to stay. And some of them now are taking interest in staying in communities. And the money I get here is around 10 million Uganda shillings a month, and that helps me to run the family. In fact, I don't even manage it. It's managed by my wife and kids.
56-year-old Tinker was in fact born in what is now Chebala National Park, and his family used to survive mainly from hunting. Animals and plants that live in the world contribute to the ecological, genetic, social, economic, scientific, educational, cultural and recreational aspects of human being and sustainable development. Ajelova says people need to be informed of these benefits so they can help in protecting the wild.
Strategies like community tourism or ecotourism would be a better, you know, way of getting everybody to benefit socially, economically, and environmentally.
The government is also giving some incentives, like startup capital, for people living near national parks so they can keep watch of the wildlife. For VOA News, Ayamugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And we end this morning's show in Cape Verde, where the second World Health Organization's Health Forum kicked off this week. The focus is how to provide universal health care to people on the continent. The World Health Organization's Africa Acting Director for Health Systems and Services Cluster, Prosper Tumusime, spoke to Ricky Shryok about progress that has been made since the last conference, continued challenges, and more.
There has been quite a lot of movement. There has been, from the side of the WHO that supports the countries, we've had a program called the UHC Flagship that works through sending out scoping missions to countries. And so far we've visited about 10 countries. What we do is that we go and sit down with the countries and the stakeholders, with the partners and government departments, and discuss their priorities for the health sector, and then agree on what out of those could be actually rolled out to improve the coverage for universal health.
As I understand it, at the conference, there's a innovation, a challenge exhibition. Have you gotten a chance to visit it? And if so, did you see anything that inspired you?
Yes, there's a universal challenge here. So there are some, for example, that use their technology for information, gathering information that is taken from clients and so on to aid the service delivery as they move on. There are quite a number of them. There are others which are on financing and the sort. So it's quite a good amount. And these are mainly youth, the young guys, the young people.
What are the main challenges to implementing universal healthcare in Africa? And Africa is a huge region, so I'm sure there are different challenges based on different spots.
No, that's correct. There are different challenges because the countries differ. There are different types of countries. We have countries that are in the federal state. We have countries that have a lot of fragile situations. We have small countries, which are like island countries, that have peculiar challenges with climate change and things like that. Then we do have, of course, also countries, for example, that are moving up from the lower income to the middle upper income countries, and they still have challenges of financing despite they have moved up a step higher as they get divorced from access to donor funding, for example. But one of the biggest challenges, I think, is galvanizing the government commitments.
And that's it for this Thursday, March the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this morning with us, and join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. Thank you.